All right. So, the reason for this talk is that at one of our conclaves, Zbigniew Zbyszek Zbigniew asked me to do a talk on how we do development in systemd, and with the hopes to, like, I think he wants himself to understand better how we do this, how all this is implemented. But, like, I think maybe we can get some new contributors this way as well. So let's talk about why you should contribute to systemd. First, let's get the first things out of the way. We don't use mailing lists, yay, but it's not like GitHub is the greatest thing either. So let's not talk about that. Let's look at the development workflow instead. What is in a good development workflow? This is what this is about your iteration flow when you're working on a project. Usually, you compile your stuff, you run it, right? You test, does it work, right? Your iteration flow, and you want that to be trivial to set up for new contributors, because otherwise no one is gonna contribute to your project. People generally have a harder time than you would think setting up your project and getting set up for hacking on it. So you want to reduce the toil and the problems they have with that to a minimum. And people tend to run really weird and really different setups, right? That's the core of Linux. Like, people can have their system set up the way they like, and very different and very complicated ways sometimes. And yet you want to try and make it work so that whatever the system is, you can still do development, or you can still hack on the project. You want it to be fast, incremental. So, okay, maybe the first build takes a while, but after that's done, it should be incremental builds. It should be fast. This includes just the compilation, but also getting into the test environment so you can do your testing. The longer that takes, the more demotivated people are going to get. At my first job, I think an incremental build of the system after doing absolutely no changes at all took 5 minutes. So think about that, waiting 5 minutes after every single change before you can test it. It's a very good way to get demotivated. You want it to be ephemeral. So how important this is depends a bit on the kind of stuff you're testing. But if you start looking at low-level Linux user space or the kernel or something like that, if you make a change and you test it and it breaks your laptop, then again, you're probably not going to try to develop on something again. So you want it to be all of your testing to be done as much as possible in an environment that you can just throw away if something goes wrong, right? Throw it all away and start from scratch without having to spend time fixing things if you did something wrong, if you wrote a bug or something like that. You want it to be reproducible, if this is used in CI as well, or if something goes wrong on another developer's laptop, you want to be able to reproduce the failure, because otherwise you tend to get into these very complicated debugging sessions. I have had this quite a few times with Leonard, where he goes on Telegram and he yells at me, "Hey, Dan, MakeOS site's not working. Why is this the case?" And if I can reproduce the failure, then it's much, much easier to get to the bottom of it. And otherwise, it's like this complicated flow, because Leonard doesn't include any logs. So yeah, you have to go and then can you please give me some logs? And it's this whole back and forth, which you want to avoid, right? And then finally, you want it to be flexible. You shouldn't have to go through hoops to make changes to the setup. It should be easy to make local changes. And if you need to make a change for everyone, then it should also be easy. It should just be a single line in the PR, not have you shouldn't have any complicated workflow of having to publish stuff somewhere, or you want to make it as simple as possible to modify. What does this look like for most regular app projects or web projects that people work on? It's something with Docker usually, right? I think Docker Compose is used a lot for this, where people define all their services, their database, their web server, and everything that they want to run in a Docker Compose file. They run Docker Compose up, and eventually you end up with a running system with a few containers that represents a local setup of your project, and then you can test against that. And then, of course, you can get into one of these containers and check logs and stuff like that. Now, if we go and look at something like systemd, that doesn't actually work, right? While we have some executables that you can test from the build directory, these are the simple command line tools that don't really do any IPC or something like that, systemd cgtop, systemd escape, ID, the UUID stuff, all of that is doesn't do any IPC. It's trivial to test straight after compiling from the build directory. Then if you get into the daemons or the command line tooling that needs to do IPC, then suddenly running from the build directory becomes a lot more complicated, because an instance of the daemon might already be running on your system, right? Systemd is core software. Your laptop is already running it. If you're already running systemd as bid one, trying to run another one as bid one from your build directory is not going to work. So you can't actually test it that way. What do you do then? Well, you can switch to the container. And not just any container. I don't think systemd is going to run in Docker, but you can use systemd and spawn. Systemd will run in systemd and spawn, and you can use that to test some of its functionality. But only the daemons that actually make sense or can run in a container, which is only a few of them, right? You can do resolvd, userdbd, systemd run, etc. All of those will run in a container. But once you get into stuff like UDEF, or anything that has to do with actually booting the system up, in a TrammFS stuff, right? Doing a switch route from the inner TrammFS to the main system, anything with encryption, anything with TPMs, anything with devices, anything with networking, the container stops being a viable solution, and you have to switch to a virtual machine to be able to actually get your testing done. And then even the virtual machine doesn't work in all cases. Like if we have some like hardware database stuff, like with hardware specific quirks and stuff like that in systemd, for that even a virtual machine isn't going to work, then you need actual hardware on the bare metal available. Luckily, unlike the kernel, where I think 90% of the testing probably has to be done on bare metal because 90% of the kernel is drivers, with systemd, we do have the luck that you can test almost everything in a virtual machine. And that really helps with the making things ephemeral, because a virtual machine is something you can just throw away, which is a lot harder if you're doing stuff on bare metal. So what else do we have to think about? Systemd does not exist in a vacuum. We don't control the environment that systemd runs in. Usually you do control the environment that your software runs in, right? You ship a full Docker container, a full app that has specific library versions which you test against. But for systemd, this is not the case, right? Systemd is packaged by distributions, and distributions choose the environment that systemd runs in. This means different user space library versions. This means configuration. This means even down to the way that systemd is packaged, right? Not every distribution has the same sub-packages. They put different stuff in different sub-packages. They do all kinds of different stuff in their packaging, right? The kernel might even be different. Yet we need to make sure systemd works in all of these different configurations, because that's the environment that systemd runs in. Like, if we would say systemd only works with these library versions, with this very specific kernel version, then nobody would run systemd. And so we can ask ourselves the question, if we just run like meson install to put systemd on a system, like, are we really testing the right thing? Because nobody is going to deploy systemd like this in production. They're going to install packages that come from their distribution. So we should be testing the distribution packages to get the best coverage of that what we're testing is actually what is going to be running in production. And then the other benefit, of course, is meson install is going to not override or not going to uninstall the previous version. We also want to test disk images. A lot of kernel testing is done with a stripped down initrd and without a rootfs. That usually works for testing the kernel, but for systemd, you want to test all of user space, so you want a full rootfs. That usually means an initrd is not enough, right? You need a full disk image. I checked, like, I thought the kernel is very similar to us in that they also need a virtual machine for everything. So can we learn anything from them? But I actually could not find a single doc on the kernel docs site on building a kernel and then booting it in QEMU with your own user space and having this like development workflow. I could not find anything at all. So I was kind of surprised by that. So how do we build a streamlined systemd dev environment then? Well, we want to make it trivial to set up, so we want to require minimal dependencies to be able to set up the environment. We want to build these distribution packages, not just install whatever, like with meson install. We want to build these distribution packages. We want to build an OS image. We want to build an initrd, and we want to have both of those to have the latest systemd in them. We want to allow customizations, right? Systemd does a lot of stuff with disk images, encryption, the invariety, user-only partitions, and so forth and so forth. So we need to support all of that. And then we want to be able to boot that resulting OS image either in a container or in a virtual machine. And we want to make that a nice setup. So auto-login as root, bind mount useful directories from the host, so you get full debug info in GDB and stuff like that. So that's the stuff we all want to make work in a streamlined dev environment. this is all systems go. So what do I do at all systems go? I shill for my project, right? Make OSI. So how do we solve this? We solve this with Make OSI. This is how you install it, right? So this goes into the trivial to set up thing. Yeah, you just clone the repo, make a symlink, and it's usable. And so this is then how the core development workflow, iteration flow of systemd looks like. You go and edit your source file. You use that make OSI box command, which I will go into detail in the next slide, to run the unit tests. You run make OSI-f VM, which will build the OS image. It will build the distribution packages. It will make sure they're in the OS image. And then it will give you a VM environment, a headless VM right in your terminal that allows you to do anything you want. You can destroy the entire VM. You can nuke its root file system. It doesn't matter. You can just throw it away afterwards and start from scratch again, and your VM will be right back as before without any changes persisting. So this gives you the ephemeral environment in which you can do any testing you would like. After that, you can go modify an integration test, write the whatever testing script you need to test the new feature, you rebuild the image again, and then run meson test again to run the integration test. And exactly the same image that is used for the manual testing for the development will also be used then to run the integration test. The important thing there is the like, it's very small, but there's like this dash I flag to meson, and this is the one contribution I had to do to meson to make this entire thing nice. And what this will do is it will attach your terminal to the running test, and that means that it is attached to the VM, and then that means we can set up the VM that if the test fails, you get a shell. So it's not just like getting absolutely no information at all and not being able to debug the environment of the failing test. No, you actually get a shell in the VM. You can run arbitrary commands to figure out why is this test failing, and then you can go fix it. What is Make OSI Box? So this is how we make the thing trivial to set up. You need a lot of tools to do systemd development, and developers could be working in a very restricted environment. So I've run into every one of these single cases. Maybe not the admin privileged one, but like, we're working on Particle OS and systemd, which is an immutable distribution. And at work, we use CentOS Stream 9 on the service, which is rather old, maybe doesn't have everything you need for systemd development, but we still want to be able to do systemd development on these systems. And so what do we do in Make OSI? We build two images. First, we build an image with all the tools you need to build the final image, and then we build the final image. This first image can be built with minimal dependencies, so you need to make OSI, you need a package manager, you need some GPG keys, and that's it. It will download all the rest you need, and then you can actually, then you have everything available to do systemd development. How does the image build process look like? Something like this. We do the tools tree, we build systemd from source in there because it has some tools we need for the image build. Then we do build the actual distribution packages. We do this in a separate image because we need we don't want all the compiler, the meson, all the library development versions, etc., in our final images. So we do the build in a separate image that spits out some distribution packages. Then we can start preparing the InnoDramFS. We can prepare the RootFS. We can install the distribution packages in both of those. We package the InnoRD up as a unified kernel image. And then we can finally build a disk image, and then we're ready to boot it in a VM or in a container. So the only problem with this setup, right, from the previous slide here, is that we have these two yellow boxes, and the yellow box means it is somewhat slow. So rebuilding the image isn't the fastest thing in the world. So to speed this up, what we can do is we can replace the second one with make OSI-r, and this means rerun build scripts. So what this will do is it will only run that step in yellow instead of all the other steps. So it will only rebuild the distribution packages. It won't actually rebuild the image. And what this allows you to do is, well, it allows you to make that package directory with the new packages available in the virtual machine via FreddyOFS. And then you can just run a regular DNF upgrade to the newer version. This allows you to skip all the work of rebuilding the image. You can just upgrade systemd. This also means you don't lose the state in the VM. So if you're edited some unit files, added configuration, made any changes you made will stay intact. Whereas if you rebuild the image, all of those changes would have been lost. And then what this also allows you to do, and this is the thing I did not think of at all when I initially developed this, is you can replace the virtual machine with a production machine and VirtualFS with SCP, and you can suddenly debug production issues very efficiently. So you get an incremental workflow to rebuild your RPM packages very quickly, very fast. You can then SCP those over to a production machine, do the same DNF upgrade, and suddenly your latest systemd is running in your prod machine. You can add debug logs. You can figure out, like, does this give me more information on this issue? No, it doesn't. Quickly do the rebuild, get new RPMs, SCP them over, upgrade again, get more information. This makes it very, very easy to debug production issues that you can actually reproduce. So I have used this a lot, and I never thought I would when I came up with this stuff. So as I said, building these file system images is slow, and one of the reasons they're slow is because when you're building a file system, it copies all of the stuff from a directory, from a rootfs tree, into a file system, right? This is makefs, x4, makefs, betterfs. And all of these operations are extremely slow because file system developers don't actually use all the fancy system calls that they added to make copying fast, right? Before, too long ago, betterfs procs was reading individual buffers for each file it was adding to a rootfs from disk and then writing it into its file system, right? And this is, on Linux these days, this is the slowest way you could possibly implement a file copy. We have fi clone range, copy file range, send file, all these fancy system calls to do quick copies without ever going back to user space, but nobody was actually using them. So luckily for betterfs procs, Mark Harmstone has fixed this a month ago, but I would love to see this in all the other file systems as well, right? You're a file system developer. You added all these fancy syscalls to make things fast, right? Use them. Let's take a quick look at the integration test then on how this works. So we don't directly invoke MakeOSI. We have like this wrapper script to handle all the glue, all the nasty stuff to involved with integration tests. So each integration test runs in a separate VM. And then once the VM finishes, whether it succeeds or fails, you need to do some stuff, right? You need to analyze the journal from the VM. You need to process the coverage reports. You need to analyze the core dumps that may have happened, because the test might have succeeded, but like if three daemons core dumped while you were running the test, you probably shouldn't mark it as succeeded. So that's why we have all this extra stuff in there to make sure that we're not like marking tests as successful when they shouldn't be. And so Meson is actually really, really good at this as a general purpose test runner. Even I would use it for like running, if I had to run tests, I would use it even if I wasn't building a C++ project or a C project or Rust or whatever. Using it as just a test runner, I think it is a great fit for that. It will run tests in parallel. It has a few nice command line options. It can spit out some JUnit XML and stuff like that. So I think it is a really great fit for this. The only problem we have not solved yet is how to divide tests between containers and virtual machines. So currently, the division is completely arbitrary, right? Depending on which test script you write your test in, it will run in the same virtual machine. All the tests in the same script run in the same virtual machine. But this is completely arbitrary, and it doesn't always make sense. You could be running five tests in the same virtual machine. The first test might fail, and it might cause the other four tests to fail as well because it messed up the environment. Ideally, you would do something like this. So you would spawn a separate container or virtual machine for each individual test so that if the test messes up the environment, it doesn't affect the other tests. The problem is that this is extremely slow because you incur the boot time of the virtual machine or container for every single VM. So this is something I'm looking for a way to solve it, but frankly, I have no clue how. So anyone that has ideas on this or previous experience, please come talk to me. There are some upcoming improvements to make sure distribution updates don't break CI, but I don't have time for that. So that was it.
Right, so question. We have 5 minutes for questions. Yes.
Thanks. Dan, Basically, I believe the part of your talk was kind of to encourage people to contribute to systemd, right? So and that's the question, kind of maybe not that much for you, but for the maintainers. Essentially, like, let's say your talk is very successful, and then you have a surge of, you know, new contributors. So how are you going to plan to deal with it, right? Because essentially, like, my experience, is like my PRs are sitting for like half a year without like attention.
Yes.
Like, so, is there any plans like how to deal with it?
There are. I don't think there are plans, but I do think you bring up a good point, right? We work at the same company. We very much know how the review process can be painful. I don't know how to fix this. I think
we have AI code reviews,
yes,
right?
Yes, maybe AI code review is like. I was saying to Leonard that like Chris Mason from BetterFS that for the kernel is trying to set up code prompts to the AI code review for the kernel. So, like, if they're doing it, maybe we should consider it as well. But aside from that, like, I think the kernel is probably also bad at this, but they also seem to be better at this with having lots more subsystems, lots more maintainers. Leonard not being a massive bottleneck in review sometimes. So I don't know if we could delegate stuff more or just generally. We don't have a lot of maintainers. I think that's also a problem, right? I don't know how we would get
work.
More, right?
I mean, it's hard work, that's a problem, you know.
Because like we have, from Meta specifically, I do the code review, but we don't really have, all of our other developers are putting up PRs, but we're also not really engaging with reviewing other people's PRs. So like, who are we to request tons of code review from Leonard if we're not doing the opposite? So I think it's a complicated problem. Unfortunately, I don't have a fix.
Thank you for your talk. I have a question regarding the contribution outside of the code itself. So one thing that I like to do is just like test beta software releases. And the question is, I think it was mentioned in earlier talks, that for some parts or some hardware or architectures, the coverage in the systemd CI is not that great. Like, where are you lacking? Where can we as a community help with the testing? And outside of code, for example.
Yes, so I think different architectures was just like a big problem until very recently, because I think IBM basically gave us a bunch of GitHub Actions runners for
I have a slide on that in two talks time.
Yeah,
so exactly that topic.
We have some ARM stuff now. We have PowerPC, we have S390. The problem with the ARM stuff from GitHub is that you cannot do nested virtualization on ARM, so we can't run most of our integration tests because we do nested, for like the GitHub Action stuff runs in VMs, and you can't do nested first, so you can't run the integration tests that need a VM. I think ARM is getting nested virtualization in the newest stuff, but it's probably going to take a while before we have access to that. So yeah, I don't know. If we had GitHub Actions runners that were bare metal and ARM, then we could actually run our full test suite on ARM. That would probably be an improvement. Aside from that, I think we're pretty good in terms of like the amount of capacity we have to run integration.
Yeah, capacity is good. Again, I have a slide on this. I don't know if you want to dwell on it, but yeah, capacity on x86 is good. But yeah. So I think, we are out of time now. No more questions. So let's thank Dan.